We're talking with Loretta Napoleoni. She's an economist, political analyst, journalist, as well as a novelist, and she's the author of Modern Jihad, Tracing the Dollars Behind the Terror Networks. You can find out more information about her book on her website, modernjihad.com. I'm Paul Nelson. Let's look at some other examples of U.S. activity. I mean, we can cite Russia or China or a number of other examples of counterinsurgency or support of what we would call terror groups. But let's focus on the United States, since we live here and we care about this country. Some other examples of U.S. counterinsurgency or terror: the Contras, with the Iran-Contra affair being one of those situations, the Carter administration's backing of the tragedy in East Timor. Can you talk about these and other events?
Yeah, sure. Well, the Contras is perhaps the most famous example because of the Contras scandal. The interesting part of the analysis of the Contras is how did the U.S. was actually funding the Contras.
Not only funded them, but created.
Yes. Well, the Contras was a creation of the CIA in the first place. Once, you know, they were set in place and they were organized as a sort of counterinsurgency group in Central America, of course, they had to fund them.
But I think we need to explain that. They were created by the CIA. No group existed.
No, the Contras did not exist before. They were created when the Sandinistas won the election in Nicaragua, the Contras were created to counteract the Sandinistas, of course, which was a pro-Marxist. It was not exactly a Marxist movement, but a pro-Marxist
left-wing,
movement. Left-wing, yes, I would say. Left-wing. Now, the Contras were former members of the army and the presidential guard of the previous government in Nicaragua. And they were set up entirely by the CIA. They were trained by the CIA. They were organized across the border of Nicaragua in various regions like Honduras, for example, El Salvador.
And I'm guessing trained at the School of the Americas.
Yes, of course. The leaders were trained at the School of the Americas and the top-ranking people. But then there was training going on also in neighboring countries, which of course ended up destabilizing the political situation in the neighboring countries. The problem was how to fund these groups because it was extremely expensive. Now, President Reagan managed to convince the Congress to give some money officially, so legally approved aid, financial aid to the Contras, and that was $24 million initially, which went to basically arm and fund 2,000 people. But of course, this was not enough because as the war escalated, it became increasingly expensive. Now, I must add something, that there was a widespread bribery going on in this funding. So a lot of money never actually reached the Contras, but were used in the U.S. by the various groups which were actually supporting the Contras in the U.S. But what the administration did is set up a system of illegal funding, covert operation, which run parallel to the legal funding. The illegal was much, much bigger. Oliver North, as people will remember, he was the guy who masterminding a series of frauds through either insurance companies, for example, in order to raise money. In the end, the people that paid for this money were, of course, the American taxpayers.
Well, let's talk about, let's take the other side of that. Let's take the devil's advocate side. The ends justify the means. The Cold War ended as a result of counterinsurgency. What do you say to people who say that?
Well, the Cold War was a wrong war in the first place. So if the fact that, that we won the Cold War is not such a great thing. There should never have been a Cold War in the first place.
Well, let's talk about that. In the wake of the Cold War, you know, we were, or I shouldn't say we, the United States feels it was, the U.S. government feels it was embarrassed in Vietnam. And so we were going to put one on against the Soviet Union. And Afghanistan was that. And people like Osama bin Laden and others were hired and trained and put to work to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. But in the wake of the disintegration of the Soviet Union, the United States missed an opportunity to create some kind of stability in that part of the world. That's one of the points you make in the book. Can you elaborate?
Well, the U.S. was motivated by revenge, which is, for a start, the wrong way to approach foreign policy. It is true what you said about Vietnam. It's the fact that, you know, 58,000 people came back home, you know, in body bags, and that was something that the U.S. really could not stand. So when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan in order to prop up a friendly government, which was extremely unpopular in Afghanistan, they took their opportunity to get the revenge out of the Soviets. So they set up what became known as the Afghan pipeline, which was a system through which the CIA together with the Saudis were actually funding the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Now, because the CIA and the Saudis, of course, were not present, physically present in Afghanistan, they had to use an intermediary in order to bring this money in. And that was the ISI, which is the Pakistani equivalent of the CIA. The amount of money that were channeled through the Afghan pipeline was immense. It was $5 billion per year. But they were not enough, because again, as it happened with the there was widespread bribery, robbery along this pipeline. And sometimes, you know, money did not arrive to the Mujahideen. So the captain of the Mujahideen would be, you know, waiting for funds that would never arrive. And this is where Osama bin Laden came into place, because he was the link between the Americans, the CIA, and the rich Saudis who wanted to fund the Mujahideen. So there was an alternative pipeline which was set in place, and that was the independent funding through charities, for example. And Osama bin Laden was their man.
Yeah, you talk about that in the book, and we get a sense that the interests of the Saudi government are very important to the interests of the United States government. But you track also how we were, and I believe it was Stinger missiles, where these couldn't even be taken. I mean, the people who they were destined for couldn't even get them over the mountains, so they couldn't use them. So they eventually end up being shot back at American troops. And in fact, the American government, you cite in the book, tried to buy them back and couldn't do so because their bid wasn't high enough.
Well, that's a very good example of the fact that the CIA had to rely upon the ISI in Pakistan to know what was going on. I mean, they had absolutely no concept of what the terrain was in Afghanistan or what was really happening. Now, the ISI had all the interest in the world, you know, to get as much weapon as possible, because what they did, they actually stolen the majority of this weapon. After the end of the anti-Soviet jihad in Afghanistan, Pakistan emerged as the country with the largest armed arsenal in Asia. And these arms were then used to help the various Islamic insurgents movement in Kashmir or in India, where Pakistan, of course, you know, had an interest to support these groups. So this is why the Stinger missiles actually were sent. And of course, you know, in the end, the Stinger ended up in the hands of the followers of Osama bin Laden. And the U.S. tried desperately to buy them back. But the market price was much, much higher than the amount of money that the Americans wanted to offer. So this is very ironic. But that's also show you how complex are this sort of war by proxy.
Yeah.